On the Record on News Talk.
Brought to you by PwC. Great minds think unalike. Different skill sets, diverse opinions, it all adds up to the new equation.
Now, today is December the 12th, as we've been saying, and today marks the birthday of Padraig Carney, not the publican from Dame Street, although that's a mistake that a lot of people would make if you don't know your history better. Padraig Carney, a former stage manager of the Abbey Theatre, but more significantly, the man who wrote the national anthem, the man who penned the lyrics for The Soldier's Song, which was originally written, not many people realise, in English. And it's a song that has some surprising pedigree. It was actually penned 9 years before the Rising, and to that generation it was an English language rousing chorus song. So the question is then, how do we get from The Soldier's Song to Aaron Levine? Will it survive? And was Padder around to see the fruits of his labour? Donald Fallon has been off gargling his best Maluka honey to make sure that he can give us a few bars at the end. And he's come in with us now. Donald, national anthems, they tell us a lot about nations, and they're often surprisingly divisive.
They are. And what is a national anthem? You know, at its heart, I suppose, it's ultimately an expression of national identity. And there's two dimensions to any national anthem. There's, of course, the lyrics that we sing, and there's the air to which we sing them. So sometimes when nations and empires have fallen through history, they've actually kept the same melody but changed the words. Probably the most famous example of that is the Russians. And in recent years, there's been a lot of talk in this country around Aaron Levine and if it would survive the transition to a United Ireland. That was an interesting poll during the week, by the way, on a United Ireland. And it's normally kind of part of this big discussion around, in a United Ireland, does the flag survive? Does the anthem survive? Now, the anthem, of course, is joined by Ireland's call in rugby. And you had this really weird situation in rugby where for some time after partition, they played no anthem at away matches at all. If they were up in Belfast, they played God Save the King. And if they were in Dublin, they played the Soldier's Song in English in the 20s and 30s. But actually, on one occasion, when I was researching this in the 80s, when they were abroad in Wellington.
This is, I think, for the very first Rugby World Cup, I think.
Yeah, they couldn't decide on an anthem. So they played a cassette tape recording of The Rose of Tralee. So there's a contender for a new Irish national anthem. People often talk about Danny Boy. You know, Danny Boy has a certain place in sporting history too. But all of this, look, that's a debate for another day. But, you know, it definitely amounts to a headache that, you know, Padraig Carney could not have imagined when he wrote a song he called The Soldier's Song.
Yeah, Danny Boy, of course, is something, we might get back to this in a few minutes, but it's something that does maybe have a cachet because it is also the Derry air, so it does have a sort of a border resonance as well. Padraig Carney wrote a lot of songs, many of them satirical, and some of which are actually still a little bit back in fashion.
Yeah, he came from Dublin's Dorset Street. There's a lovely monument there to the national anthem on Dorset Street, and he's left a kind of impressive collection of songs. Some are very funny. The satirical God Save England, which is sung with gusto by a Dundalk folk group called the Merry Wallopers. What a great name. They sold out a number of nights there in Vicar Street, and sadly they didn't get to do the gigs, but they've kind of dug deep into the archives and they sing that song, and there's great humour in it. It's kind of satirical stage song. Irish men, forget the past and think of the time that's coming fast, when we shall all be civilised, neat and clean and well advised, won't Mother England be surprised. Now, these are real kind of stage Kamali kind of songs.
Yeah.
But on the whole, I think it's really sad that Padraig Carney's primarily remembered, if not for Aaron Levine, as being just a branch on the family tree of others. You know, he's the uncle of Brendan and Dominic Behan, who are both very capable of writing a good song in their own day too. But yeah, a largely forgotten character with an impressive songbook.
If you were running a sweepstake and you were wondering whether Donald would get a mention of Brendan Behan into this slot, as he now seems to do pretty much every week, you could tick the box on that one, your spotter's badge. There's a bit of me actually that thinks that Brendan Behan would be like your Patronus.
Yeah.
But if you like you found yourself down a dark alley and you needed help, you just think out your wand and then like this 15-year-old in an ill-fitting suit with pints would just appear.
Trying to salvage Dominic from obscurity now for many, many years.
Padraig Carney comes from a street not far from the Beans. Oh, there we go, another mention. And he was very shaped by the Gaelic revival that was happening around him at the time.
They were Russell Street, which it doesn't really exist anymore in any real way. Russell Street was in the shadow of Croke Park and Carney's Dorset Street. And, you know, just up the other end of the street, you have John Casey, who, like him, is swept up in the kind of excitement of the Gaelic revival. You know, there's a lot going on. There's branches of the Gaelic League everywhere. Amongst other things, it's a way to meet young members of the opposite sex. It's a very exciting time to be involved in all of this. John Casey becomes...
People forget that the Gaelic revival was the original Tinder.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's where Dev met Sinead, among other things. But John Casey becomes Sean O'Cahasig. He eventually settles on O'Casey. And everyone seemed to be swept up by this. You know, the language, the arts, the theatre, national expression. And Padder gets a job in what is the real expression of that national sentiment, the Theatre of Yeats, the Abbey in 19... 19- 04. Okay. But, you know, aside from his job as a stage manager in the Abbey, with his friend Patrick Heaney, a composer, he's prolific in pumping out these songs. And the Soldiers song, what's kind of funny about it is it predates the Soldiers. You know, the Volunteers are born in 1913. There's no young men in uniforms marching through the streets when he writes this one. Some suggest as early as 1907.
Which is interesting then when you try to put it in the context that it was written, but it's also worth reflecting that something which is now played at all the great state occasions with all of the splendour and colour and everything that goes with it, that it was a song, at least again written in English, in a Greasy Spoon cafe, albeit across the road from the GPO.
I love the picture of this, you know, over countless cups of tea. Patrick Kearney writes it in the Swiss Cafe, which is on the corner of North Earl Street and Sackville Street. You can see the GPO from the cafe where he wrote it. So, I mean, it would later be sung with gusto in the GPO by the rebels during the Rising. And it actually consists of three verses and a chorus. But when we sing Our Rendezvous today, we're basically just singing the chorus.
Yes,
most people have never heard the verses in either language. But it begins, we'll sing a song, a soldier's song, with cheering, rousing chorus, as round our blazing fires we throng, the starry heavens o'er us, impatient for the coming fight, and as we wait the morning's light, here in the silence of the night, we'll chant a soldier's song. And when there are soldiers a few short years later, you know, they're mostly young men. They're parading in uniform through the streets. And this song becomes really popular, you know, on marches and training camps and hikes. And it's eventually printed in the newspaper of the Fenians. I love how they were a secret society with a newspaper. But they printed in Irish Freedom, which is edited by the brilliantly named Bulmer Hobson.
Mm-hmm.
What a name. Described by British intelligence as the most dangerous man in Ireland. And once it goes into print, once it's in Irish Freedom, every young volunteer, every 16-year-old in a volunteer's uniform is marching through the streets singing the Soldier's Song.
And this is where it very quickly then becomes a sort of an unofficial national anthem. Obviously, it doesn't become official until there's full independence. But it does overtake what was hitherto the unofficial national anthem, which was a song from the 19th century.
Exactly, because as British subjects, our national anthem very technically was God Save the King. You know, and if Irish athletes were to win medals, for example, at the Olympics, it was the British anthem that was played. We were British subjects, whether we liked it or not. So we had a kind of de facto unofficial national anthem. Nationalists always saying, God Save Ireland, which is a song from the 1860s about the Manchester Martyrs. But look, it's a 19th century song for a 19th century people. It's actually even sung to the tune of an American Civil War song. So in every way imaginable, it's a 19th century number. And then the Soldier Song comes along and it's fresh, it's optimistic. And I think what I like about it, lyrically, it's about the here and now. It's not about singing about, you know, people 50 years earlier who'd gone to the scaffold. It kind of makes the men and women singing it feel like they themselves are the soldiers. You know, we're the ones who are going to shape history, and the history is being made now. So when the Rising happens, he's there, Patter. He's in Jacob's factory. But all across the city, you hear it. They're belting it out every night on the barricades. And by the end of the year, it's being sung in New York City. Victor Herbert, a very respected composer, he performs his own musical arrangement of it in New York in the winter of 1916. And then with these great pictures of Dev in 1917 standing for election in East Clare. And the banner behind him says, soldiers are we whose lives are pledged to Ireland. Mm. So this song has just been propelled to the top of the pantheon.
And it's remarkable again then when you think of it, that if it was written in 1907 and you think of it now, and if you think of the words in English, if you're thinking about, you know, sworn to be free, no more our ancient sire land shall shelter the despot or the slave. And this idea of like, tonight we man the barn of Whale and Aaron's cause come war, we will chant the soldier song. And you think that it's almost been written to portray the memory of 1916, not something which was almost trying to predict what was going to come. Nearly a decade afterwards. The Irish translation, which we are more familiar with, does come a little bit later along, but it hasn't always been as popular as commonplace as it is now.
It's into the 20s. Liam O'Rean, who's a civil servant, later translator of the Oireachtas, he pens an Irish language version. There's been a couple of Irish language translations, but his is the one we run with. And then the GAA very much propelled that into being the leading version. They encouraged people to sing at Oscuelga before matches. And there was a kind of weird point, a kind of ludicrous point, where the GAA were encouraging people to sing at Oscuelga. Most people knew it in English. So you read newspaper reports where half the crowd are singing in English, half the crowd are singing Oscuelga before a big game.
It was the Adeste Fidelis versus O Come All Ye Faithful of its time.
Yes, and this couldn't go on forever. But the translations kind of would become unintentionally controversial. Sinna Fianna Fáil.
You know,
the volunteers referred to themselves as Fianna Fáil. It was a term that they took from Irish folklore and mythology. They actually wore FF buttons on their uniforms. But when there was a party called Fianna Fáil, you know, some people were none too happy at that translation. Mm. And Lecra Fáil is sometimes sang instead.
Mm.
So even as early as the 20s, there's people in the Oireachtas saying, oh, I don't know about this song. You know, one senator says, Leaving out sentiment, I must confess, from a literary and musical point of view, I would regard the Soldier song as, shall we say, a jaunty little piece of vulgarity. And wow. I think we could do a lot better. Another stood up and defended it and said, national anthems come about not because of the suitability of the words or notes, but because they're adopted generally by the nation. That's exactly how the Soldier song became the national anthem. It was the anthem on the lips of the people when they came into their own. I kind of like that point, that whether you like the song or not, you know, the revolutionary generation, it was good enough for them. They liked it.
I suppose like any sort of official authority or sort of state construct, that only really exists when people are prepared to take it on at ground level. Presumably, if you write a national anthem, you can probably then dine out or drink out on it for the rest of your life.
Yeah, and the invitations to dinners are never ending and everything else. But no, it doesn't work that way. Pádraig Kearney, to his eternal annoyance, was not initially paid any royalties for the use of the Soldier song by the state. So he actually made money off the song when it was published as sheet music before independence.
Yeah.
And you could joke about this, that he made more money under the British from the Soldier song than he made in an independent Ireland. And when the state eventually acquired copyright over it in the 1930s, it's the princely sum of £980
It's not mean money in the 1930s.
Goes to Pádraig Kearney and the family. He has to share it with the family.
Yes, share
of
the with
composer.
The guy who wrote the tune. Yeah.
So you know, he lived modestly in his final years.
It's fair to say, and as we began today, the whole question mark around when the anthem is played, it tends to be something which dominates discourse a lot more in sport than in anything else.
Absolutely. And look, there's interesting accounts from English-born footballers, but you know, Irish by blood and family. People like McLaughlin, who we talked about on the slot before, who kind of found themselves tasked with learning this anthem to prove their Irishness. And Mick McCarthy has spoken about how they learned it phonetically, lots of the team. So they weren't entirely sure what they were singing, but they were singing, and they were making a point of being seen to sing the anthem. I think you can't help but notice many athletes, including people that were born on the island of Ireland, they just turned to the flag when the anthem was on.
And just sit there looking very solemn. And just look solemn.
Hope that will do the job. And in the north, when it comes to sport, kind of one really interesting feature of the peace process has been the DUP attending the occasional GAA match in an official capacity. Edwin Poots, when he went in 2008, they generally arrive after the anthem has been played at their seats.
Oh, they came just in time for throw-in.
Very diplomatic. Arlene Foster, when she went to the 2018 Ulster final, it was interesting, she stood for it, but remember that game was played in Monaghan. So in that sense, they felt, well, it's the Republic's
anthem. She was
setting
the border, so let's go.
In the Republic.
If God Save Ireland, then, was a 19th century song, and the Soldier song is very much a 20th century song, then you can argue then that is there maybe the argument for the passing of the torch to some other 21st century song?
Yeah, was Pádraig Kearney's song a song of its time? That is the great debate that's been going on for a long, long time. Like, you know, when he passed, Behan said, "I was proud the same blood ran in our veins." But Pádraig is now quite forgotten, I think it's fair to say. But up and down the island of Ireland, someone somewhere, some group of people somewhere today and tomorrow and every day will sing "Our on the Veen." And you know, the former international rugby player Hugo McNeil, when he commented on the anthem situation, he very wisely said, we might get a bit hung up on this. He said, you know, for those who have problems with Ireland's call or are on the Veen, wait until we get to the real issues. You know, it won't be the biggest issue in a new Ireland.
People won't even know in a referendum because they want the song.
It won't be on the front page of issues. But you know, if God Save Ireland made way for the Soldier's song, you know, who knows?
Next week, Donal Fallon will debut his proposal for a new national anthem.
I'm meeting Phil Coulter after the show.
And if you want to listen to his previews, he's also the presenter of the Three Castles Burning podcast on Dublin history, which you'll find anywhere you get your audio online. He's also the author of Henrietta Street from Tenement to Suburbia, which would make an ideal Christmas present for somebody in your life.
On the Record on News Talk.
Brought to you by PwC. Great minds think unalike. Different skill sets, diverse opinions. It all adds up to the new equation.